We're currently on a preaching series on Nehemiah. Did you know that? Brilliant. And actually, Nehemiah was a really cool guy, like a really cool guy. And he lived in the ancient world, if you don't know this, way back when, like about 1,200 years ago, quite a long time ago. And about 500 years before Jesus walked the earth, and 300 or 400. And in fact, rather than me just going through the story, I've got a kids' church little video that we played the kids about Nehemiah, just because I don't want to assume that everyone knows the story of Nehemiah. So can we just roll the YouTube video? It's very simplistic, and I know that, but you know, I quite like simple things. It's much easier. Right, let's go. 2:6. So, did you know, I think someone said this, the book of Nehemiah, whilst you're finding it, have you found it? Got it? Okay, whilst, until it behaves itself. So, Nehemiah and Ezra, which is the book that comes before him in the Bible, used to be one book. And they had two parts, and then the Christians separated them. That's what they did. And they're quite connected because Ezra and Nehemiah were part of this whole team that brought the children of God, the Israelites, back into a restorative relationship with him. So it's really cool. If you've never read Ezra and Nehemiah, I encourage you to do it because they're not that long and they're really interesting. And it's amazing to see how God uses relatively ordinary people to do amazing things. Have we got it, or shall I just give a bit of a prezi? Okay, so I'm just going to say it. Okay, let's move on then. What we'll do is I'm just going to say, so Nehemiah was a guy who was a cupbearer, and he lived in the ancient world in a Persian empire, and he worked for the king of called Artaxerxes. And the cupbearer role is like this really important role. You know, we might think it seems like a bit of a low-ranking role because you have to try food that could be poisonous for the king. But actually, it was a very high position in a royal household. And so Nehemiah's role as cupbearer would be to try any pieces of food or drink that the king or the royal household would have to consume. And one day, his brother came along and said, look, Jerusalem is in a state, the walls are broken down, and, you know, the people are in a mess. Can you, you know, that was it, actually. And Nehemiah mourned. He was really upset to hear that Jerusalem's walls had fallen down, and that they had been bashed down, and that there was all sorts of destruction going on around the walls. And he felt moved and compelled to go to Jerusalem and rebuild the wall in Jerusalem. And the story goes on about he faced many challenges in the rebuilding of the wall from people who were opposing him, but he was steadfast, pushed on, and the wall was rebuilt, which led to an amazing kind of revival with all of the Jewish people to come back to God with Ezra. And I don't know about you, but I spent years reading the Bible but not really reading it. You know, like knowing the stories, but not really properly reading it. And I watched this comedian, I can't even remember his name, but he was talking about the difference between going out and going out. And I think it might be an Essex thing. You know, like if you're going to go out or you're going to go out, you get dressed up. Do you know this? Going out. You know this? You're not going out, you're going out, which is like you get a babysitter, you get all dressed up. That's out. And going out is just, you know, just popping out. And I kind of thought that's kind of a similar thing. You can read the Bible, but not really read the Bible, you know? And I don't think I'm alone, because the amount of times I've had conversations and I'm like, we should both know this. We've been brought up in Christian homes. Why don't we know this? We know the story, but we don't know it. Do you know what I mean? And this generally happens in books like that. Do you guys want to see the video? I'm getting a thumbs up. Should we just watch the video? Okay, let's watch it.
Nehemiah. So part of God's story is about a guy named Nehemiah, and it goes like this. Remember God's family? They were called the Israelites because they lived in, you guessed it, Israel. But some of them lived far away from their home. And one of those guys was Nehemiah. He lived in Persia and worked for the king. One day, his brother told him that a city in Israel called Jerusalem was suffering. And many people there weren't following God anymore. And their city wasn't in very good shape. Nehemiah cried, God, you are wonderful, but your family's home is in trouble. Please help us. When I serve the king his wine today, make him pleased with me and have him do what I ask. Later, when Nehemiah served the king's wine, the king noticed that Nehemiah looked sad. So the king asked why. Nehemiah told him about Jerusalem and asked if he could go back to rebuild the wall. The king could have killed Nehemiah for asking to leave. But instead, he said go. He even helped. That's because God heard Nehemiah's prayer and answered it. Anyway, Nehemiah went to work rebuilding the wall. But little did he know he was going to need to ask for a lot more help from God. See, God and his family have always had enemies. And these enemies wanted to stop Nehemiah and the people helping him. First, they made fun of them. So Nehemiah prayed again. He said, God, some people hate us. Please get rid of them. And went back to work. Now, God does hear and answer every prayer, but sometimes not in the way we expect or even in the way we want. And at first, it seemed like God wasn't answering this one at all, because when the enemy saw that Nehemiah was still building, they planned an attack. But Nehemiah trusted that God heard his prayer even if it didn't feel like it. And God did. He caused some people to overhear the enemy's plan and warn Nehemiah. Even though the enemies were still after him, Nehemiah planned a defense and told the others, "Don't be afraid of your enemies. Remember the Lord. He is great and powerful." And on they worked, building, building, building. The closer the wall got to being finished, the more Nehemiah's enemies realized they couldn't stop him by making fun of him or by attacking him. Time for something else. They tried everything. They sent messages to get Nehemiah to leave the wall and meet them. He wouldn't. They hoped Nehemiah's hands would get weak, but Nehemiah had asked God to make his hands stronger. They even paid a priest to ask Nehemiah to leave the wall and come to the temple. But Nehemiah trusted God more than anyone else, even the priest, and he refused to stop doing the job God had given him. Kids, are you willing to listen to God and obey him, no matter what? Well, finally, the wall was done. God's family got to go home again, and Nehemiah's enemies found that nothing stops God's plans. The Israelites celebrated and praised God, and as they praised, they realized how much their sins had hurt God, and they felt terrible. They told God they were sorry and thanked him for helping them. Then they made a brand new promise to follow him, and Jerusalem was once again a safe place where people honored God. And that's the story of Nehemiah. But just so you know, there's another story where God fixes something that's broken. See, one day, God would send a very special rescuer, not to save a wall, but to save the world. He made it possible for not just Israelites, but everyone in the whole world to confess their sin to God, thank him for his rescue, and follow him. And just like that old wall was made new back then, our old lives can be made new right now, because Jesus has rescued us. And that's a part of God's story.
Thank you. I can sit down now. Done. Job done. That was quite intense, wasn't it? All of it looks better on a small screen, all of that flashing. But actually, it kind of tells you the story about Nehemiah, right? And just going back to that whole reading the Bible and reading the Bible point I was wanting to make, you know, I think that so many of us, especially people that have been brought up in Christian homes, think they know a lot about the Bible. But actually, because they know the stories, or it's like, yeah, I've read it. But when you truly read it properly, it impacts you in a different way. And I just want to encourage you, if you have been brought up in a Christian home, And you think you know all of the stories, and yeah, I know that story about Noah, and I know that. What we often do is we dehumanize them and we make them characters in a children's book. And not really seeing what God intended us to see, which is who he is through these people and how we can relate to that. And, you know, when you read the Bible and you really read it in a way of trying to understand, what is God trying to tell me here? How does this apply to my life? It completely changes the way you read the Bible. It's not just a list of a historical story. It is alive and it is inspirational. And so really this is like, when we come to Nehemiah, he could have summarized the story in just a paragraph about a guy who went and rebuilt a wall. But actually, the reason God wanted it included in the scriptures is because it tells us so much about the character of Nehemiah. And that's what really struck me when I was reading it and rereading Nehemiah this week as I was preparing for the message. And what I'd like to do today is I want to talk about the type of person God uses to do his work. And so if you are a note taker, I always take notes, no matter who's preaching, because I just think it's a really good habit. And at the top, and I know that Anthea will take notes, top of your title should be the type of person God uses. And I don't mean uses as in like a bad negative thing. You know, we have that word nowadays where it's like, you know, they're such a user, or they're going to use us. I don't mean God is a user. I mean, he will equip us to do something. That's what I mean when I'm talking about using. And you might know that, but I'm just saying that for people who might not. Now, if you think about it, if God can use ravens to feed a prophet, and he can use a donkey to literally speak to a human being, he can use anyone, any of us. And I know that some of us, sometimes we have this strong desire. We're like, Lord, please use me. I want to be used. And I almost think that can be a bit of a redundant prayer, because God does want, he already wants to use you. Like, his desire is to use you. But what happens is we make ourselves unusable. So I think that the prayer, rather than, Lord, use me, it should be, Lord, make me usable, because then he can use you. And Nehemiah modeled something for us about character and about the type of person that God can use. Jesus said in Matthew 22:14, and I've always had this written in my Bible from a young kid, and it's when he said, for many are called, but few are chosen. And the way that I read that is the same as what I'm saying to you today. We are all called to be used by God, but only a few of us are chosen, because we're not making ourselves usable. We're like, God so badly wants to use us, but it's like, okay, make yourself usable so I can use you. So what I want to do is equip us with three things, three character traits to make us usable. So the first one is someone who is available. Now, there is this cheesy saying that says, you know, God doesn't want our ability, he wants our availability. It's a very popular saying. And the thing is, it's really true. It's not about our ability at all. Like, it's totally irrelevant what our own ability is. It's about, are we actually available to him? And this may sound so simplistic and very childlike, but so many of us live lives where we don't make room for God to use us, because we're so busy doing our thing. So busy. I spent years doing my thing. And no wonder God didn't use me, because I wasn't available to be used. So let's look at Nehemiah. So Nehemiah is the king's cupbearer. And I've already said earlier that it's a very important role in the ancient kingdom. And I've kind of said this. the point that the cupbearer had to be with the king wherever he went. So he had this really like strong relationship with the king, because the king had to trust him to tell the truth or to actually make sure he tasted the food. So he was a good man. And he was someone who did his role really good. And I'm just getting a bit confused with my notes because I've kind of said so much and I don't want to be repetitive. But Nehemiah made himself available. He had a really great job. A really great job. He would have been furnished in the king's palace. He had everything going for him in terms of worldly stuff. He was successful. He did well. And I recognize with that so much of us as human beings, we can put so much on our own way, our own job, our own thing, that we literally completely block out God. And Nehemiah lived in a different nation. He wasn't, Jerusalem wasn't his home. You know, it was where he was from, but it, you know, his home was in Persia. Yet his heart was moved so much that he wanted to do something about it. But so much of the time, we can be so consumed with our like thing, our road, our plans, that we're not even concerned about being available for what God wants to do with us. And I just really love how Nehemiah went from stepping up to something so humble, you know. In fact, it was probably a bit of a demotion, you know, going from being a cupbearer, which was some scholars say it's like being a prime minister. You're so important, very, very important person, to then humbling himself, going back to a land that was broken down, a wall was broken down, and he physically, you know, laid the stones. If you read Nehemiah, he was one of the people that built it, literally. He wasn't just an overseer. So he humbled himself and actually did that. And I love that this is how God works. You know, if you think about it, Moses went from being a shepherd to then being used by God to deliver a whole people. And remember what he said, you know, he wasn't very good at public speaking. So then God helped him, sent Aaron. Jesus went from being Moses' assistant to Moses' successor. David went from being a shepherd boy to being a mighty warrior king. Did I say Joshua? David, I mean. I'm just checking you were listening. That's the standard. Someone is. My dad is. Thanks, Dad. So David went from being a shepherd boy to being the king of Israel, one of the greatest kings the Israelites have ever had. And that's because of what God did through him, because he was available. You know, David was available on the day to go and take his brothers some supplies. He wasn't too busy doing his thing. And that's really the main point I want to make. Number one, we have to be available for God to use us. Not having our heads so blinkered in our plans, in building our world, in building our thing, that we are so unavailable for God to use, or we're just available for like an hour on a, you know, Tuesday night to go to life group. It's like, okay, that's not really being available. And I'm not saying that God's going to then, if you say you're available, he's going to then say, right, I'm going to put you in theology school and make you be a pastor. That's not it. It's just being available. So number two, God can use people who are compassionate, sensitive, caring about things. Someone who cares about what God cares about. You know, this is the holy place for God's holy people. Jerusalem was and still is. And Nehemiah cared that the walls were broken down, so much so that he cried. And really, it may seem quite strange to us that he would cry and be so upset about a wall and a gate being broken down. But really, back in the day, Jerusalem was surrounded, and actually even today, was surrounded by aggressive and people who want to take them down. And a city was only as great as its walls were strong. Because a wall offers safety from raids. It symbolizes strength, peace, dignity. Unwalled cities have no defense whatsoever. their enemies would see that they're actually probably insignificant, because this is a place that's not fortified. It's broken down, so it's shameful. And Nehemiah understood that. And he cared so much that it moved his heart. And he did five things in Nehemiah 1:4 in response to the news that the walls were broken down. He sat down, he wept, he mourned, he fasted, he prayed. And I think that we can probably summarize those five actions into one word, which is compassion. And compassion is more than knowing something is unfortunate or sad. That's not true compassion. Compassion is almost feeling it like it's happening to you, like understanding how bad it is. Thanks, Cher. And Nehemiah was the kind of person God could use because he had this humble spirit and a caring attitude and a soft heart. And I think that when we stop caring about what hurts God, for example, people that don't know him, if we're not moved anymore because, you know, people are lost or don't know him, then God can't use us because we just literally don't care. And this is a challenge, like, how much do we care? Thomas challenges me all the time. Thomas is our son, one of five sons. And he is got the softest heart towards the lost. Every single night, he prays for the lost. Every night. Sometimes he cries. And I'm like, why are you upset? Because people are going to hell. Do you understand? People are going to hell. I was like, it moves him. And it challenges me because it's like, does it move me? Or is it more of a knowledge? Do you see the difference between compassion and knowledge? Also, we can actually stop caring about our own sin because it becomes quite comfortable and it's no biggie. It's not, well, everyone's doing that. It's kind of not really a big, major, you know, top 10. It's kind of, you know, down the list a bit. And we stop caring and we stop being moved. But then there are times in our life when we're so, like, up close and personal with a sin in our lives that it moves us to the point of tears. And I'm not saying that crying is proof that you feel something, but I'm saying that we really, truly connect with that thing, that sin. And I think that if we start not caring and not being moved by what God cares about, and I tell you what God cares about, he cares about sin not being in our lives and not taking dominion over us, and he cares about the lost. And if we walk through lives without caring or having any compassion about that, I think it's a dangerous place for us to be, church. Because what we do is we become too comfortable being the metaphorical cup holder. You know, we're in that place, it's all good, we've got a good thing going on. You know, it's poor Jerusalem, I really feel for them. You know, I'm sure someone will go along and build that wall. That is the stance he could have taken. He could have taken the, I know it's really bad, that's kind of like, I've got ancestors there. And in fact, I'll speak to the king and I'll send them some things, because he could have just not connected with that. And I'm not saying that, you know, we always say, back in the 90s, it was very much, you're in the army of God. We don't say that nowadays, do we? So much. It was like the Salvation Army, we're soldiers in the army. There was a lot of songs in the 80s, actually, that was all about us, the church, being the army, the soldiers, marching. I mean, I remember so many songs. Yeah, yeah. So if we are the army of God, if we are that, I don't mean that we're supposed to be crying all the time. And I'm not saying that being compassionate looks like constantly crying and being very affected by everything, because actually we can sometimes go into this class of Christian that is overly sensitive. That's not the same as compassionate. You know, overly sensitive about everything, overly touched by everything, but things that shouldn't touch us, like being offended constantly. you know? And we can do that quite a lot. And or holding on to our hurt so much that it just draws us, because it disables us as soldiers. It's almost like the metaphorical soldier in us is like sent to the infirmary, but like for like 10 years, you know, constantly in that state of not being able to be used by the general and sent out. Pardon? It's that time already. Look, I've only been speaking for about 15 minutes. So I encourage you to realign your priorities when it comes to compassion. Hey guys, is that good? How can I ignore the kids? They're so cool when they come in. I'm just going to have to zoom through this now. So Nehemiah, did you know that he didn't receive a penny for the work that he did? He just got on with it. Didn't receive anything. He made sure of it as well. And I just want to encourage you, in Colossians 3:12, it says, "Therefore, as God's chosen people, holy and dearly loved, clothe yourself with compassion." So he literally instructs us to clothe ourselves with compassion, kindness, humility, gentleness, and patience. Doesn't that just show what an amazing God we have? He says, clothe yourself in compassion, clothe yourself in kindness, in humility, gentleness, and patience. So thirdly, he chose someone who was courageous, someone who stood firm and true to what God said and didn't forget his promises and wasn't wavering in who God was to him. And Nehemiah, you know, as the cartoon showed us, and when you read it, he had constant opposition. And there were a lot of times that he could have been fearful, and, you know, the king could have killed him for even suggesting that he go somewhere. But he was brave and courageous. And because I have to wrap it up, I want us to be people that are strong and courageous. We're strong and courageous to share the gospel. We have compassion. We're moved because we care. And then we're strong and courageous to actually do it. Because it seems like a really simple challenge, but I think that many of us need to be challenged in that way of being strong and courageous. And Joshua 1:19 says, "Be strong and courageous, for the Lord your God is with you wherever you go." And if you walk through life knowing that God is with you, you will be strong and courageous. And Nehemiah knew that. He knew that God was with him, God had given him a purpose, and he was available to God to be used. 2 Chronicles says, "Be strong and courageous. Do not be afraid or discouraged." Deuteronomy 31:6 says, "Be strong and of good courage." So these are instructions. God is telling us, be courageous, because then he can use us. Because we're not going to wimp out. And it'll be like, oh, it's going to be a bit too awkward. You know, it's too awkward to say that, have that conversation. But if we're just there as available people that care about what God cares about, and we have courage, this makes us usable to God. And then who knows what could happen? Look what happened with Nehemiah. He built a wall, and then the people returned to him. They returned to God. And actually, their praise was heard miles away. They were so loud in their praise when they returned. They returned with such vigor, like nothing they've had before. So that's my encouragement to you guys. And let's be people who are courageous, who are compassionate, and who are available. That we're not making our walk, our life mission, our personal one, the mission. You know, remember that when you enter into God's kingdom, you have a king, and he's given us all a mission, not just the professional pastors, preachers, evangelists. He's given us all the mission to go out into all the world and preach the gospel, make disciples, and baptized. Every single one of you who knows Jesus, that is literally your mission. And if your personal mission, your personal plan is overshadowing that, I would encourage you to realign your priorities. Okay.